Okay, continuing. Canto 1, Chapter 15. Text number 10. This is Arjuna. Verse after verse, taking us through his own deep contemplations upon Krishna in a mood of separation. Bhagavatam is very confidential. We're getting inside the heart of Arjuna. What's he feeling? What's he thinking about? Here it is. It was he only who loosened the hair of all the wives, the miscreants who dared open the cluster of your queen's hair, which had been nicely dressed and sanctified for the great Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. At that time she fell down at the feet of Krishna with tears in her eyes. This is in reference to it's mixing. That same Draupadi, he's referring to Draupadi as your queen. Of course, she's Arjuna's queen also. But that's the respect the Pandavas show to their elder brother. So, at the Rajasuya Yagya, her hair was nicely dressed and sanctified. However, that same hair was mishandled and mistreated by Dushasana. And for that, the whole Kuru dynasty was destroyed. Other reasons also, because Krishna wanted it. But we also understand Prabhupada writes in chapter 9, the demise of Grandfather Bhishma, as great a warrior as was Grandfather Bhishma, as great a devotee as was Grandfather Bhishma, however great one may be, that greatness will be lost. Everything will be lost if protection of women is not observed. And Grandfather Bhishma failed to do that. And so, by Krishna's indication to him, or his plan, so the Kuru dynasty wives, they in turn had to loosen their hair, which apparently was the practice. As widows, their hair would not be kept carefully as it was when they were married. Their hair would be loosened. And because of Draupadi's devotion to Krishna, when that difficulty came, she fell down at the feet of Krishna with tears in her eyes. The Lord can tolerate insult upon himself by any miscreant, because the Father tolerates even insults from the Son. Which is true. But he never tolerates insults upon his devotees. By insulting a great soul, one has to forego all the results of pious acts and benedictions also. Text 11. during our exile, Durvas Muni, who eats with his 10,000 disciples, intrigued with our enemies to put us in dangerous trouble. At that time, he, Lord Krishna, simply by accepting the remnants of food, saved us. By his accepting food thus, the assembly of Munis, while bathing in the river, felt sumptuously fed. And all the three worlds were also satisfied. This is a long purport. Giving some biographical information about Durvas Muni, for starters. Durvas is said to be a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva, who has qualities like Lord Shiva in that he's easily pleased and easily angered. First incident that's mentioned is when he visited the royal assembly, royal palace, when Kunti was just a small girl. Kumari Kunti, mentioned here. Everyone was afraid of Durvas Muni because a little mistake and he was angered. You know any people like that? I know some people like that. A little mistake and easily angered. But Kunti was not afraid. She just very happily wanted to serve Durvas Muni, and she served him so nicely. Just a young girl, that he gave her a benediction. And we all know the benediction. Some mantra to chant. Later she gave that mantra to Madri also. You chant this mantra, and by chanting this mantra, any demigod will come and provide you with a child. Because Lord Shiva was pleased by the long austerities once performed by Durvas Muni. Durvas Muni was ordered to accept the priesthood of King Shveta Ketu because the king had performed a sacrifice in honor of Lord Shiva for 100 years. Durvas Muni had capacity to travel anywhere, and so he did. Sometimes he would show up in Indraloka. Sometimes he would show up in Hastinapur. Sometimes he even went to Vaikuntha. He had this capacity. So the incident that's being referred to in the verse is that Durvas Muni, one time, while the Pandavas were in exile after the gambling arrangement, they lost their kingdom. Durvas Muni visited again in Hastinapur. And Duryodhan was very calculating. He knew, first of all, how to please another person who, like himself, can be easily angered. So he went out of his way to make every last arrangement to please Durvas Muni. So that at the end when Durvas Muni would offer him a benediction, he knew just what to ask. He knew approximately where the Pandavas were staying. He knew that they also had this arrangement from the sun god. Because when the Pandavas were in exile, although they were in exile, people would come to visit them because they were the Pandavas. And sages in the forest, they would also be honored to have the association of the Pandavas. And they were having so many visitors without any supply. They were out of the palace. So Maharaj Yudhisthira didn't want to not attend to guests properly. So Domya gave him this advice. You meditate upon the sun god. The sun god will supply a solution for you. So the sun god came and brought this mystical pot. A pot that when whatever ingredients Draupadi would put inside the pot and cook, as she distributed the contents, it would increase and increase and increase and increase, unlimitedly increase, until she took her meal, and then it would produce no more for the day. So Durvas Muni knew about how long it would take to get from the Hastinapur to the camp. Please go, make sure you go just after the evening hour. Pay a visit to my dear cousin, Yudhisthira. And make sure you go on an empty stomach. Durvas Muni could understand exactly the mind of Duryodhan. He smiled. I said, very well. I asked you if you would like a benediction. That's your benediction, so I will go. So he went through the forest with his 10,000 followers and showed up just after Draupadi had finished her meal. And naturally, what do you do when you receive a guest? You offer them hospitality and a place to sit and something to eat, along with his 10,000 followers. So Durvas Muni accepted, but said, I should first take my bath before I take my meal, and I'll come back afterwards. You know the story. It's just nice to hear it again. So the Pandavas and Draupadi and Kunti were in big anxiety. What to do? What to do? And when devotees are in big anxiety and they don't know what to do, they call out to Krishna. So Draupadi called out very audibly Krishna's holy name. And all the way from Dwarka, Krishna heard. Draupadi's in distress. So he came at once. He didn't have to get his chariot and horses together. He just came at once. And it was in the evening time, and Krishna came, much to Draupadi's surprise, right at her door. Oh, Krishna! She was crying. She was in great distress. What a terrible calamity. Krishna said, you can tell me about the calamity in a moment, but I've just come to visit you. Can you please feed me something? So, oh, Krishna, why are you doing like this? You're omniscient. You know what the difficulty is. He said, I'm asking you. Please get me something to eat. Oh, but Draupadi, you love to cook. Yes, but I've done my cooking for the end of the day and the pot won't produce anything more and I don't have any more ingredients and you're asking them 10 hours to feed Draupadi. Now you bring me the pot. There's nothing in the pot. There's nothing in the pot. I washed it myself. Draupadi, bring the pot. And Krishna searched and just under the edge of the pot, there was a piece of vegetable. And Krishna ate that little piece of vegetable. And as he ate the piece of vegetable that was cooked by Draupadi, he was perfectly satisfied. And because he's within the heart of Durvas Muni and the 10,000 followers, and as the verse says, all the people of the universe, they were also satisfied. Meanwhile, Yudhishthir, not understanding that this would satisfy Durvas Muni, sent Bhima to go to the river and invite him to come back. To what? To a calamity. But when he went to the river, they were leaving. Well, are you going to come and visit us? No, no. We'll come again some other time. We're feeling not so hungry right now. And so the calamity was over just by Krishna being satisfied. So Prabhupada comments the several things. When devotees are in some difficulty, the devotees take it that this is an arrangement given by Krishna, at least it's an opportunity to fix our mind upon the Lord with undivided attention. As they say, the silver lining in every cloud. You know that expression here? Never heard that one. Really? Okay. Clouds make things dark. Problems make things dark. But in every cloud or every problem, there's a silver lining. Something good. That's the expression. It's a cliche. So the devotees see that difficulties are opportunities. Great opportunities. To be forced, just as Kunti was seeing, let the calamities come again and again. Because when calamities come, we fully depend upon you for the solution of the calamity. And when we fully depend upon you for the solution of the calamity, you come. Now that the calamities are gone, you're leaving? Bring the calamities again and again and again, so that we can be in your association. Because to us, your association is more meaningful than no calamities. Calamities are no calamities. We want your association. Another message of this pastime, Prabhupada writes, is that Krishna is Yogeshwara, the master of all mystics. So when the master of all mystics is pleased, then Durvas Muni, a little mystic, is pleased. When the master of the senses, Rishikesh, is pleased, the little senses become pleased. Our focus should be to please Krishna. And there's another message for householders. In case any of you are householders or householders-to-be. We offer everything to Krishna in our homes before we eat. And what's the result? That everyone, Prabhupada writes, everyone, even a company of guests numbering 10,000, will be satisfied because of the Lord's being satisfied. That is the way of devotional service. Our means may be meager. When the Pandavas were in the forest, they didn't have their royal treasury and royal kitchens and royal stocks and supplies. But they had devotion to Krishna, and their devotion to Krishna was satisfying, although it was just a morsel. And when our cooking is done with devotion for Krishna, real devotion for Krishna, just even a small morsel of that cooking is so satisfying. And the opposite is also true. Without devotion, whatever volumes and volumes of things people have, it's not at all satisfying. Draupadi had such attachment for Krishna. And the Leela also shows that. In dire difficulty, beyond any solution, as she was being stripped naked, same. In the face of the difficulty of dishonoring and displeasing Durvasa Muni, completely depending upon Krishna. With such intensity, Krishna personally came to protect her in both circumstances. Text number 12. It was by his influence only that in a fight I was able to astonish the personality of God, Lord Shiva, and his wife, the daughter of the Himalayas. Thus he, Lord Shiva, became pleased with me and awarded me his own weapon. Other demigods also delivered their respective weapons to me. And in addition, I was able to reach the heavenly planets in this present body and was allowed a half-elevated seat. Now, we already heard the description where Indra was defeated by Arjuna, or at least checked by Arjuna in military combat. So Indra was very pleased and offered the benediction of his celestial weapons, which he would give later. So this is the later. I don't have the details of that combat. But the combat with Lord Shiva was so intense that Lord Shiva was very pleased with the prowess of Arjuna, and so he benedicted Arjuna with his Pashupat weapon, and the demigods also came and supplied various celestial weapons to Arjuna. And he was also, by Agni, given this benediction that he could travel wherever he liked. So another time he went to the heavenly planets, as he says, in the same body. So ascending to the heaven is aspired for by many people. Arjuna didn't have to wait till after this life. He just went in the self-same body. And there was some difficulty. The demigods called upon Arjuna to help them in that difficulty in some battle. And Arjuna was victorious. When I stayed for some days as a guest in the heavenly planets, all the heavenly demigods, including King Indradev, took shelter of my arms, which were marked with a Gandiva bow, to kill the demon named Nivata Kavacha, O king, descendant of Ajamidha, at the present moment I am bereft of the personality of Godhead, by whose influence I was so powerful. So this is that situation. Indra was his father. He went to see King Indra because he had this capacity to do this travel. And while there, he was called upon by the demigods to fight a very, very powerful demon, which even they were troubled by. And Arjuna defeated him. Text 14. The military strength of the Kauravas was like an ocean in which there dwelled many invincible existences, and thus it was insurmountable, like the ocean. How do you cross the ocean? Stand at the shore of the ocean and think, okay, get out of the way, I'm coming. But because of his friendship, I, seated on the chariot, was able to cross over it. And only by his grace was I able to regain the cows and also collect by force many helmets of the kings, which were bedecked with jewels that were sources of all brilliance. So there's two things. It's the Kurukshetra battle, which was like standing at the shore of the ocean. But Arjuna is fearless, and he was victorious because of the presence of Krishna by his side. And that same personality gave him the opportunity, while incognito at the palace of King Virat, he did battle single-handedly against the whole corps of army and all the generals, and defeated them all. Defeated them so soundly that he was able to take the turbans from their heads, upon which there were valuable glittering jewels, and brought the turbans and the jewels back and presented them to King Virat. The situation, the whole of Mahabharata is very intricate, but King Virat was known to be very, very powerful king, largely because of the powerful general, the chief of his army. And the chief of the army, forget his name, was a brazen, brash, known to be, you know, tough, rude, forceful person. And this personality, the general of King Virat, had great attraction for Draupadi. He felt, she is just suitable for me. Besides, look who she's with, these five strange people, because they were incognito, not allowing their identity to be known. And at night, Draupadi would be doing some duties to serve her husbands, and the general approached her forcibly, and she dashed him and laughed and told the Pandavas, and Bhima wanted to pulverize that guy. And Yudhisthira said, no, no, no. That won't work, because we're incognito. But it happened again. She came in such distress that Bhima couldn't restrain himself. There was a plan that Draupadi would go in a place where the general would follow, and then in a secluded situation, Bhima grabbed him and beat him to such a pulp, he mushed his body into like a little square and left it sitting there. End of the general. Bhima was very satisfied. But the word spread. The general, King Virat, was found dead in this little squished little space. And who has the capacity to do that but one person? So the Kauravas, it was nearing the end of their exile and their final year of incognito, and the thought was, if they could just discover where they were, it's another 12 years of banishment from the kingdom. And if they come back, well, then the kingdom is theirs. So they got this idea what's described here. The Kauravas picked a quarrel with King Virat and decided to take away his large number of cows. It was actually, they wanted to go and find out who did this thing to the king's general. So they took their armies and went to the place where the cows are being kept. And they forcibly were taking the cows from the cowherds. And the cowherds then came running to the king. Protect us! We're looking after your cows. And the whole Kaurava army is out there taking the cows away. Do something! Help! Well, King Virat had lost his number one general because of his lusty attraction for Draupadi. But Arjun said to the king, you give me your son, and with your son, I will go and personally defeat them. And he spoke with such courage and conviction, I will be the chariot driver of your son. So the son was timid. The Kaurava army. Don't worry. Together we will be victorious. I assure you. So it was so compelling. His confidence was so great. And he drove the chariot right to the tree where Arjuna kept his bow and arrows, all of his celestial weapons, and took them down from the tree. And then they switched roles. Arjuna became sat in the back, and his son became the chariot driver. He drove right through the Kaurava army, and single-handedly, Arjuna defeated them all. Then they were convinced, there's only one person who can do that with this bow. That's Arjuna. The only one who could do what the other one did is Bhima. We know who they are. But Yudhisthira was okay with that calculation because sufficient time had passed. Their incognito time was not broken. And so they were safe. And when they came back, King Virat was so amazed. Whoa! You protected my whole kingdom from the whole Kaurava army. Who are you? I'm Arjuna. And that's Yudhisthira, and that's Bhima. So he was so happy to have these elevated personalities in his kingdom for 1 year. So he wanted Arjuna to marry his daughter. But Arjuna said, I can't marry your daughter. I was the teacher and she was the student, and the teacher can't marry their student. But I have a son who is of marriageable age. So that was accepted. So Abhimanyu became the husband of Uttara. And shortly after, the child was conceived, and shortly after that, the battle of Kurukshetra took place. Because when the exile was completed, then it was negotiation time. Give the kingdom back to the Kauravas, or Pandavas. And the answer was no. Even they were just defeated, the answer was no, by one of the Pandavas. So Arjuna is attributing the power to do all of that was given to him by Krishna. It was he only who withdrew the duration of life from everyone, and who in the battlefield drew this speculative power and strength of enthusiasm from the great military phalanx made by the Kauravas, headed by Bhishma, Karna, Drona, Shalya, etc. Their arrangements were expert and more than adequate, but he, Lord Sri Krishna, while going forward, did all this. In December, I was visiting in the Alachua community. And while I was there, the head of the Gurukul invited me to come and examine, just, you know, visit and say Hari Bol to the kids. So I did. And in one of the classrooms, it was the older boys. And there was one devotee who was narrating. It was just after Gita Jayanti. So after Gita Jayanti, they had one person narrating each day for 18 days the battle. So I came on like day 15, and the students were, whoa, this is great. I asked them, what do you like best about school? The battle of Kurukshetra, I like that best. Mahabharata. Especially the boys, they like the battle scenes. Prabhupada writes, it would have been physically impossible for Arjuna to win the battle had the Lord not helped him by every kind of tactic. Such tactics are generally followed by every statesman, even in modern warfare, but they're all done materially by powerful espionages, military tactics, and diplomatic maneuvers. But because Arjuna was the Lord's affectionate devotee, the Lord did all of this without personal anxiety by Arjuna. That is the way of the devotional service of the Lord. Arjuna took his risks. He made his vows by the end of the day. So, Arjuna, why did you do that? Because I knew you would protect me. See, Arjuna had such faith in Krishna that he could do anything. And he knew that his ability to do that anything was coming from Krishna. The intimacy of, as was mentioned to Indra, Narayan, the incarnation of the Lord, it's the same as Arjuna and Krishna. They're inseparable. The jiva, who is the devotee of the Lord, and the Lord, who is the master of the devotee. They're inseparable. And unconquerable. Next verse. Great generals like Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Gurishrava, Susharma, Shalya, Jayadrath, and Bhalika. Do we have a flashlight? We have cell phones. Okay, here's a flashlight. Thank you. All directed their invincible weapons against me. But by Lord Krishna's grace, they could not even touch a hair on my head. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj, the supreme devotee of Lord Nrisimhadeva, was unaffected by the weapons the demons used against him. So this is very nice. Arjuna is comparing the protection that Prahlad Maharaj received to the protection that he received. Of course, Prahlad was just a small boy and Arjuna was an adult. But still, the weapons that were placed against Arjuna were life-threatening, formidable. Prabhupada gives the list of the threats, life threats to Prahlad. First one he listed, he was thrown into fire. In boiling oil. He was thrown from the top of a hill. He was thrown underneath the legs of an elephant. He was administered poison. And the last one Prabhupada says is, Hiranyakashipu personally picked up a chopper, was going to chop up Prahlad Maharaj. And even so, that was it. Finished. Hiranyakashipu. Killed by Lord Nrisimhadeva. But Prahlad wasn't not a hair on his head was harmed. So when Krishna wants to protect, no one can harm. If Krishna wants to destroy, no one can protect. So better be on Krishna's side. One of the most puzzling personalities in the whole of Mahabharata is Karna. Prabhupada gives a little biography of Karna. We know he was the first when Kumari Kunti received this benediction from Durvas Muni, and she called the sun god, and the sun god came. Draupadi was very embarrassed, and the sun god assured her, "Don't worry, you've called me, so now I have come, but I'm not married, and this is terrible." "Don't worry, your virginity will not be lost. Well, then I'll be walking around pregnant, and don't worry, the child will be born immediately." So child was conceived and born, and through the ear of Draupadi, so he's called Karna, Kunti. So she was, what to do with a small child? I'm an unmarried woman, girl. So she put the child into the forest. And she was found, or he was found, by Adhirat. A Shudra, a carpenter, and together Adhirath and Radha, his wife, raised Karna. Now we were speaking earlier about being charitable. Here's commented, Karna was also very charitable. And he was so charitable that when he was born he had golden ornaments of a Kshatriya, earrings and bracelets, and he gave them to Indra. Indra was so pleased. Indra gave him a very special weapon, a celestial weapon, a Shakti weapon, which he then later used during the Kurukshetra battle. So, because Karna was, although a Kshatriya, because sun god and Kunti, he was a Kshatriya by spirit and by birth and by character. But because he was raised by Adhirat, it was taken that he was a Shudra, because otherwise his birth was unknown. So when the Swayamvar of Draupadi was taking place, he was checked by Draupadi from participating. And so he had this enmity, very strong enmity, towards the Pandavas. And this was detected by Duryodhana, and so naturally, he, being the kind of personality he was, he made friendship, alliance with Karna. And during, when he was the king, Duryodhana's, the time when Duryodhana was ruling, he made an arrangement that Karna was made king of a whole state. It's mentioned here, the name of the state is Anga. And the Anga state was Bengal, Orissa, and Madras. So that's a huge tract of land. So Karna was very happy and very much on the side of Duryodhana, which was very nice for Duryodhana, because now he had a very strong warrior on his side. And this is how demoniac people work. They just make alliances with people like themselves and become stronger and stronger, and the whole world suffers because unqualified people are ruling. Anyway. So, during one part of the intrigue, Karna came up with an idea, and he suggested it to Duryodhana. The idea was, we want to know where these incognito Pandavas are. Let's go attack Drupad's kingdom. And when Drupad is attacked, the incognito Pandavas will have to show themselves to protect King Drupad, because Draupadi, their wife, will insist, protect my father. The idea came to the attention of Dronacharya, who scorned this plan, attack Drupad, for that reason. For what? What religious principle is involved in this? And you use your military skill for just political purposes and not for religious purposes. Everything will be destroyed. But somehow, Drona convinced them not to do that. When the gambling match took place, Karna gets credit for advising Dushasana, bring Draupadi after she had been gambled, bring her before us. And then we want to see her naked beauty. Both he and Duryodhana. So, on the one side, Karna seemed as bad as Duryodhana, but he had a virtuous side also. This is the his charitable nature, and in certain ways his strong adherence to virtue. Very complex personality. But one thing, he was always inimical to the Pandavas, and therefore whatever good quality he had meant it was misused and spoiled. Also mentioned in the purport, another page and a half, different kings who were on the opposing side, huge, huge, powerful kings. One of them is Trigartha. Trigartha was there when the cow stealing event took place, and he was such a powerful fighter that he was able to personally arrest King Virat. But because of Arjuna's prowess, all of that was relieved. Then the last personality is, Jayadratha. Poor Jayadratha. Such a powerful fighter, but a lusty man. And his lustiness was his demise. And the attraction for his lust was Draupadi. So that meant he was finished. Because who can harm Draupadi? And the Pandavas, to pose himself against the Pandavas, poor Jayadratha. He was the king of the Sindh province. Prabhupada writes here, modern Sindh, Pakistan. And his wife's name was Dushala. So He was on his way to be married when he saw Draupadi the first time. He practically fell out of his chariot. He was so lusty in attraction for her. He first saw her at the Swayambar, then again during his on his way to getting married. So he sent one of his friends to go like be a go-between and get Draupadi to come to his side. And she rejected this approach with great scorn. So later he saw her again, and she was just gathering items from a field for her husband's. And Jayadratha got off his chariot, approached her, and tried to forcibly put her on his chariot. And she punched him, knocked him over. Draupadi was tough. He fell to the ground. But he grabbed her. He was powerful, Kshatriya, and put her on the chariot and started driving away with the chariot. And Domya, the priest of the Pandavas, saw. And he called, stop this behavior. When this came to Arjuna's attention, he took the vow that he would personally kill Jayadratha during the battle, whenever that opportunity would come. The Pandavas then attacked the soldiers of Jayadratha and killed them all. This is when he was taking Draupadi away, and Bhima caught hold of Jayadratha and beat him so severely he was almost dead. And they cut off all of his hair except five little hairs sticking up. Then he was taken to all the kings and introduced as the slave of Maharaj Yudhishthira. And he was forced to admit himself to be the slave of Maharaj Yudhishthira before all the princely order. And they finally brought him before Maharaj Yudhishthira. Maharaj Yudhishthira said, "Let him go. Why are you doing this? This is total humiliation." And so Jayadratha was released. But Jayadratha was in, "I've got to get back at the Pandavas." And so he underwent great austerities, severe austerities. He went all the way to Gangotri in the Himalayas. And a very severe type of austerity he underwent for a long time to please Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva gave him a benediction. The benediction he wanted was that he could defeat the Pandavas at least one at a time. So when the battle began, and Abhimanyu was being mercilessly killed, the Pandavas tried to come to his rescue, and Jayadratha fought off the others with this ability that was given to him by Lord Shiva. And when Abhimanyu was killed, that's when Arjuna took the vow, "I will kill Jayadratha personally." And that's when Krishna said, "Why did you, before the end of the day, I will destroy him." So he's given this vow. So the battle arrangements the next day was they protected Jayadratha. They made it so that if anyone that went to go after Jayadratha would be killed. But so Arjuna was being driven very dexterously by Krishna through this very exciting, through this warrior, that warrior, and even Dronacharya was overwhelmed by Arjuna's prowess, because he was, "I'm going to get Jayadratha and finish him." When Jayadratha heard that Arjuna had taken that bow. He wanted to leave the battlefield. He asked permission. They said, no, you stay. We'll protect you. And just as he was about to kill Jayadrath, Krishna cautioned Arjuna. Jayadrath has this benediction that wherever his head falls, that person's head will crack into 7 pieces. So take one of your special arrows and send the head of Jayadrath long distance away. And it fell on the lap of his father, who was in meditation at Sampak Panchaka pilgrimage place. And Jayadrath's father saw, looking in his lap, was the head of his son. He pushed the head of his son off his lap, and his head cracked into 7 pieces. Thus ended Jayadrath's father too. And who was the one behind all this prowess of Arjuna? Krishna. It was by his mercy only that my enemies neglected to kill me when I descended from my chariot to get water for my thirsty horses. And it was due to my lack of esteem for my Lord that I dared engage him as my chariot driver. For he is worshipped and offered service by the best of men to attain salvation. Arjuna had this ability. Prabhupada explains in the purport that when you're fighting, water is essential because you get thirsty. Your horses get thirsty and the fighters get thirsty. And without water, sometimes they just die for lack of water. Dehydration, I guess. But Arjuna had this ability that instead of just digging a well, he would just fire an arrow, enter into the water, and the water would come out of the ground. Instant water fountain. So he fed his horses or gave water to his horses that way. And same with Grandfather Bhishma. Grandfather Bhishma was lying in the bed of arrows and water went into. Quenched the thirst of Grandfather Bhishma. Such was the power of Arjuna's fighting with the use of bows and arrows. O king, his jokings and frank talks were pleasing and beautifully decorated with smiles. His addresses unto me as, O son of Pritha, O friend, O son of the Kuru dynasty, and all such hardiness are now remembered by me, and thus I am overwhelmed. Generally, both of us used to live together and sleep, sit, and loiter together. And at the time of advertising oneself for acts of chivalry, sometimes if there were any irregularity, I used to reproach him by saying, my friend, you are very truthful. Even in those hours when his value was minimized, he, being the Supreme Soul, used to tolerate all those utterings of mine, excusing me exactly as a true friend excuses his true friend, or as a father excuses his son. So we were speaking earlier about forgiveness. And when there is fast friendship, some indiscretion, even some words that are spoken that are, you know, like, how truthful are you, man? Like, you know, people might say. Some inappropriate language that later you regret. You don't really mean it like that. It's just because of the intimacy, you may say some things. It's not. Krishna overlooked it. He's the personality of Godhead. To be worshipped. But because of the intimacy of he and Arjuna, sometimes Arjuna took that intimacy and, not fully understanding, not fully conscious of what he was doing, spoke like that. Krishna forgave him, just as a true friend forgives a true friend. O Emperor, I am now separated from my friend. And dear most well-wisher, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore my heart appears to be void of everything. In his absence, I have been defeated by a number of infidel cowherd men while I was guarding the bodies of all the wives of Krishna after Krishna had left. Arjuna was taking charge of protecting the queens. And one time while they were passing on the road, some cows were passing and cowherd men were taunting the queens. And Arjuna went to check them. And the cowherd men with the little sticks defeated Arjuna. My prowess is gone. There's a very nice explanation of this pastime. I'll read it. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, well, I'll just say it, explains that this is what appears that Arjuna was defeated. He was actually defeated by Krishna, the cowherd men. Here is how that explanation goes. From the Brahma Purana and Vishnu Purana, it is said that once the fair denizens of heaven, as ladies, the heavenly damsels, pleased Ashtavakra Muni by their service. And so they were blessed by the Muni to have the Supreme Lord as their husband. So Ashtavakra Muni, after giving this benediction to the denizens of the heaven, was moving along. And as he was moving along, because his body was Ashtavakra, was bent in eight places, he moved in a very awkward way. And so the heavenly damsels started giggling, laughing at him. So he turned and he cursed them. That they would be kidnapped by rogues, even if they would get the Lord as their husband, then those same girls, same ladies of the heavenly planets, they realized that they had done something very wrong. So they offered prayers to Ashtavakra Muni to please forgive them for their foolishness. They didn't mean any ill or any harm. So then the Muni gave them a benediction. Well, now that I've uttered it, you'll be taken away by rogues, that you will regain their husband. Even after being robbed by the rogues. So in order to keep the words of the great Muni, Lord Krishna himself kidnapped his wives from the protection of Arjuna. Did you hear that before? Right in the first canto, purport, from Vishnu Purana and Brahma Purana. Otherwise, they would have been at once vanquished from the scene as soon as they were touched by the rogues, just like, you know, Sita. Who can touch Sita? These are queens, these are consorts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who can touch them? Krishna. So they regained and it was to support the statement of Ashtavakra Muni. Krishna himself appeared in that way. Krishna defeated Arjuna in the form of cowherd boys. Then Prabhupada writes, besides that, some of the gopis who prayed to become wives of the Lord returned to their respective positions after their desire was fulfilled. After the departure of Lord Krishna, he wanted all his entourage back to Godhead, and they were called back under different conditions only. So that's very interesting. So he's now, the section is almost over. He's looking at his Gandiva bow. I had the very same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same chariot, drawn by the same horses, and I used them as the same Arjuna, to whom all the kings offered their due respects, but in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of them, at a moment's notice, have become null and void. It is exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulating money with a magic wand, or sowing seeds on barren land. It means nothing. They bear no fruit. O King, since you have asked me about our friends and relatives in the city of Dwarka, I will inform you that all of them were cursed by the Brahmanas, and as a result they all became intoxicated with wine made of putrefied rice and fought amongst themselves with sticks, not even recognizing one another. Now all but four or five of them are dead and gone. Factually, this is all due to the supreme will of the Lord, the personality of Godhead. Sometimes people kill one another, and at other times they protect one another. O King, as in the ocean, the bigger and stronger aquatics swallow up the smaller and weaker ones, so also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to lighten the burden of the earth, had engaged the stronger Yadu to kill the weaker, and the bigger Yadu to kill the smaller. So, Arjuna is pouring out his heart to his brother. And we're so fortunate we're hearing the heart of Arjuna. Mostly it's Arjuna asking questions or fighting. But here is what his deeper inner feelings towards Krishna are. Very, very confidential. In the purport, this last purport, I'll just mention this and we'll end. Prabhupada speaks something very, very profound. I found it. He speaks of the struggle for survival and survival of the fittest, these phrases that are used so often. He explains that the root cause of conditioned life is this living entity wanting to lord it over material nature. Strong, conquering over the weak. To give facility to such imagination that the living entity has, this situation is set up where there is disparity. There's some strong and there's some weak. So one feels, I can dominate. I can control. When in fact they're being controlled and they're being dominated. This mentality of lording it over material nature and the creation has naturally created a disparity and therefore the struggle for existence. Far out. It springs out of our original desire to enjoy and exploit nature. It's something that we're not entitled to. So how to facilitate that desire? Because it's illusory. It can't happen. We're not the enjoyers of Krishna's property. So this illusory struggle, you know, the Kali Yuga, the quarrel between people and people getting together to themselves stronger so they can dominate over the one that they're wanting to control or don't want to be controlled by. It's all springing. It springs out of that one desire. If we can let go of that one desire, the whole material show is over. Just that giving up that one desire is to become the servant of Krishna. And then it doesn't matter who's stronger, who's weaker, who's enjoying, who's on top and who's on the bottom. It doesn't matter. Because to Krishna, it doesn't matter. And to the soul attached to Krishna, it doesn't matter. To be in the position of being a servant in material circumstance is lower. But for the devotee, that's our happiness, is being the servant. And it's real happiness. It's not imagined. It's real happiness. The whole struggle for material happiness is over. The happiness is just being in Krishna's service. We gain entrance into the absolute realm by letting go of this one principle. But it's so hard to let go of trying to be the controller. The fruitive tendency, control and dominate and possess so that you can enjoy, is very deep. But the position of devotion is perfectly natural. And there's greater strength in the position of devotion. So the going back to his comment about Prahlad Maharaj, he was just a small boy that he would, but he was fully protected. And Arjuna, great warrior on a battlefield with generals that were huge array of military phalanxes, but they didn't harm a hair on his head. He was fighting, but he wasn't fighting in the sense of, I'm going to dominate you. He was just fighting to please Krishna. What Krishna wanted, so he was doing. It's a whole other consciousness. It's a whole other experience. And the invitation that we're getting from the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita is to enter into that experience. Regain that experience of remembrance of Krishna while doing each thing that we do. Then this material disparity is gone. It's because it's just serving Krishna. Kevala Bhakti. It's very profound what Prabhupada is describing in the purport. Okay, so any discussion?
It's much related to how to deal with the fear for surrendering to Krishna, or the feeling of like everything would be lost, something like that.
What will you lose? Are you independent? You lose the illusion of independence, but not... It's a very nice description of Narada as he's describing in the 7th chapter of the 1st canto. Because of his complete dependence upon Krishna, he has absolute freedom. It sounds contradictory. Dependence is you lose your independence, or you lose your freedom. But by dependence, he has more freedom than anybody. He can go anywhere, at any time, instantly. And practically omniscient like Krishna. And what was the price? Full dependence upon Krishna. So the question that you've asked is, being, fear itself is illusion, and independence itself is illusion. The fear of surrendering to Krishna is it's illusion. We have no independence. So many examples Prabhupada would give, but just, to stand up and walk across the floor. We don't have independence. We're completely dependent. If Krishna takes away our power of locomotion, we can't walk. We can't blink our eyelid. We can't breathe. We can't... There's no independence. It's illusory. And the fear of losing that which is illusory is illusion. So how to deal with it? Here's your question. Recognize reality in illusion. The question is very nice in terms of the section that we're reading, because exactly the same thing is happening with Arjuna. His sense of being separate from Krishna is going to crescendo into realizing there is no separation from Krishna. It's just by remembering Krishna, he's feeling Krishna's presence. And then illusion is gone, fear is gone, separation is gone. Surrender is our natural position. And anything other than that is a diseased condition. I fear giving up my disease, because what will I have if I don't have my disease? I'm afraid I might become healthy again. We're so distanced from what our healthy position is that we think like that. And that's illusion. So step by step, little surrender. See what happens. It's a good question. We're deeply attached to suffering. And why am I afraid to let go of my suffering? Because if I let go of my suffering, I'll have nothing. So there needs to be faith in Krishna. You're not with nothing. You're without. You lose your sufferings. You lose your illusion. And the process, the remedy of that fear, is the process of hearing and chanting, exactly as we're doing. Exactly as Arjuna is doing. And by his doing, he's realizing, he's feeling his connection with Krishna. Even the mood is feeling separation from Krishna. In the mood of feeling separation from Krishna, he's remembering Krishna and feeling the presence of Krishna. And then he has this full-on realization. Tomorrow morning's class, he has full-on realization. Krishna's actually with him. Remained. Before he departed, he made arrangements so that I could feel connected with him after his departure. And that means is his remembrance. It's a process of bhakti. And how does that remembrance come? Hearing and chanting. And by hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna, we're in contact with Krishna. There's still the willful act of surrender. It's not passive. Like Prabhupada gives the example of when you take a shower, you don't just stand there in the shower, okay, now I'm going to get clean. You're in the shower, but you're making yourself clean. It's not passive, it's active. The process of surrender, likewise, is active. But the surrender, the beginning of surrender is just, okay, I'll come to Vrindavan and I'll sit and I'll listen. And I'll chant. That there's some surrender involved. And from that there's some experience. As you, one of the earlier statements you made, there's some experience. Gives us confirmation of Krishna, the reality of Krishna. And you continue with that process and the reality becomes more approachable. Here's a written question. Deepa? Okay. It's about devotee relationships. I struggle in relating and interacting with devotees properly. Devotees are doing devotional service nicely and are full of qualities, and I am not having any quality. What type of mood should I carry towards devotees? I could just give an answer to the question, but I was thinking to speak more generally. Or broadly. Krishna consciousness needs to be accepted from the heart. So, we can accept Krishna consciousness from the head and try to go on the path of bhakti and make adjustments. But that's not the essence of Krishna consciousness. The real solution to something like this and many other questions is to go to the position of the heart. And from the position of the heart, it's simple. Devotees are the association of devotees, or being in the company of devotees, it's an opportunity arranged by Krishna. It's right in nectar of devotion, or nectar of instruction. It's an arrangement of Krishna for us to have loving exchanges. Nectar of instruction. So how do we properly address ourselves to the devotees? Take up six types of loving exchanges and just practice at it. From the heart, not out here as behaviors. Just like what we're doing right now, there's some disclosure, hearing something in confidence. Confidence doesn't mean private. Confidence means something that's very personal. And then disclosing one's mind in confidence and hearing another discuss confidentially. This is what we do with devotees. We have confidential exchanges with one another. It's loving exchanges. And through the medium of loving exchanges, one's heart is moved. And if one's heart isn't, if it's not from the heart, it's just in the head. And then, you know, we get the head configured properly for a few milliseconds. And then, you know, something else comes along. The changes are, you know, we're disoriented again. But if the heart is fixed, then all kinds of things can happen, and the heart remains fixed. Just varieties of loving exchanges with the devotees. So, here comes a devotee. My life is moving along. Here comes a devotee, or here comes a number of devotees. This is an opportunity for Krishna, from Krishna, to take up loving exchange. So then, I don't just say, oh, Hari Bol Prabhu, how are you? And we can do that. There's external things. But there's the concern of how are your practices and devotion? What's your experience? What's your realizations? What have you read recently? How has it moved your heart? How is your, you know, just in confidential ways, as appropriate with the individual. In one sense, what should be our mood towards other devotees? There are opportunities for us to serve. We want to be the servant of the servant of the servant. So here's the person to serve. But the medium of service is these loving exchanges. So I said, I was thinking, while the translation was going on just a moment ago, I was thinking, to speak more broadly than just, you know, this particular question, but and that more broadly is really what devotional service, or what devotees and exchanging with devotees and devotional service, is loving exchanges. But we're not used to that. We're not on the platform of loving exchanges. We're on the platform of mental adjustments and behaviors. And so we're not connecting. We're not feeling satisfied. So we keep making adjustments. This adjustment, that adjustment, and it's not satisfying. So Krishna consciousness is not just an endless series of adjustments. Krishna consciousness is acting from the heart in loving exchanges. Ultimately, the opportunity of loving exchanges with devotees leads you to the loving exchange with Krishna. Because the devotees are representatives of and servants of Krishna. We chant the holy name. What happens? What's the experience? The chanting of the holy name can also be something that's external. It's a behavior. It's something that devotees are supposed to do. We hear, we're supposed to chant. So we chant. But it may not be moving the heart. So how do you get the chanting to move the heart? How do we take up the opportunity of being in the company of devotees in such a way that it's moving our heart and we're giving of our heart to those devotees? We have to go more deeply into what the activity of chanting is, or what the activity of association is. Chanting is a real good one. It's the best one. It's because we do it every day. At least we should be doing it every day. And Krishna is all powerful. Krishna is our dearmost friend. And all transcendental potencies are invested in each and every one of Krishna's names. And we're chanting 25,000 of them every day. I repeated it, or I spoke it before, I'll speak it again. It's a very nice, powerful statement that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur expresses. Chanting is not, now related to this question of association of devotees in a moment. Chanting is not making some sounds. Bhaktisiddhanta says, you can get a machine that can make some sound. Or you can train a bird to make the sound. That's not chanting. Chanting is from the heart. So when from the heart we call Lord Nityananda, O deliverer of the pure holy name, please grant me your mercy and fill my heart, touch my heart with the pure holy name. And when we're in that mood and we make the sound, it's the same, seems to be the same sound, but it's not the same sound. That, when it's the heart is moved and calling out Krishna's name, that's chanting. That's chanting. So, practice like that. Literally, call out from your heart. Call out, oh Lord Nityananda, please be merciful. You're the giver of the pure holy name. Kindly, let that pure holy name touch my heart. Enter my heart. And in that consciousness, chanting will take place. So now, you know, association with devotees, same. The devotees are carriers of bhakti. In their heart is devotion for Krishna. And I value devotion for Krishna. Here comes a devotee. Let me recognize what a devotee means, what a devotee is. Value that. And ask the devotee, please share your devotion for Krishna with me. And although I have such little in my own heart, but that little that I have, you're very merciful. I'll just share that little that I have, and you'll think it's something wonderful, because you're such a devotee. And in this way, the devotees share with one another from the heart. It's love. That's what we do with how we properly regard devotees. They're little emissaries of Krishna, carrying devotion for Krishna. And it's an opportunity for some of that devotion that they're carrying for Krishna to spill upon me or enter and touch my heart. And that little bit, I'm repeating myself, but the little bit that I have, let me share that little bit that I have with feeling. So that together, our little bit can be something that can grow in our attraction for Krishna. Mutually. So we try to serve those devotees. That should be our mood. And hear from them and share with them. And offer gifts and receive gifts and give prasadam, receive prasadam. Have loving exchanges with the devotees through the medium of service to them. Just as we're doing here. I mean, literally at this moment and also this little Gary?
Varieties of service.
To provide us entry into the spiritual world, where there's varieties of service and Krishna's at the center. There's a question here. Are you going to do that one? Go ahead.
Maharaj, abhi class mein suna ki Arjun mein jo bhi shakti thi, wah Bhagwan ke karan thi, aur Bhagwan ki upasthiti mein thi, to Bhagwan अब भी नहीं है तो मैं थी तो भगवान अब भी नहीं है तो हम भगवान के संबंध कैसे बना सकते हैं. अब तो वैसे भी कलयुग है, समझ में नहीं आ रहा है. The question is, Maharaj, that it is described in the class that in the presence of Krishna, Arjuna was so powerful, and Krishna was the cause of all his prowess and things like that. As soon as Krishna left, all his power and everything was withdrawn. And right now, for us also, Krishna is not present with us.
Whose question? Is that your question? Whose question? It had to do with service. It didn't have to do with physical presence. Krishna had some service for Arjuna. It was described earlier. Krishna causes the creation. Krishna descends within the creation. Krishna brings his devotees. He has those devotees do some service. Krishna withdraws those devotees. Krishna withdraws himself. He withdraws the creation. It's all under his direction. So, why this special power, some special service? Because he's a special devotee. Dearmost friend of Krishna. Because of his mood of friendship towards Krishna, love for Krishna. It's not that he lost his love for Krishna. Krishna wanted to make this very clear. It's for me. And so he withdrew it. Was there service? Because there's always service, because that's what we are. We're servants. So protecting the queens, that was a service, right? But Krishna took the potency away. It's not just because he left. And therefore, Krishna's left now too, so we have, there's no, not like that. It's in where there's service to be done. Krishna gives remote. He can also give, but he's within the heart. But it's not even remote. And Krishna can appear before you like that. Okay. There's another question that's written down, and I'm thinking I should address something besides just these. There's a theme to the questions that I'm perceiving. But I'll read this question, then we'll go to the theme. You told us in an earlier answer that a person is attached to suffering. But this morning I explained that nobody wants misery or suffering. How can we understand this is a contradiction? It's the nature of illusion that we're attached to that which we don't like. And we're averse to that which is our nature. It's how illusion works. You know, it's not rational. It doesn't make sense. So don't try to make sense of that which is illusion. It doesn't, there's no good reason for being attached to that which we don't want, suffering. But illusion makes it look attractive, even when it's suffering. Happiness in the mode of passion. And the beginning looks like nectar, and the end is like poison. And we keep doing it. Nectar, poison. Maybe I need to do it differently. Nectar, poison. I need to make some adjustment. Nectar, poison. I'm going to go study a book and then I can do it better. Nectar, poison. And we do it endlessly, mindlessly, like a donkey. Boom, 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 boom. It doesn't make sense. We keep doing it. So both statements are true. Nobody likes to suffer. And we're attached to that which brings suffering. And it's like, you know, this other question of fear, of surrender. Surrender what? Surrender our suffering. For instead, real happiness. Well, how do I know there's real happiness? Because I'm not surrendering. I'll never know. So the theme that I'm getting is something like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's description of licking on the jar of the honey. He uses that example. You never know what honey is like until you open up the jar, stick your finger in, and taste it. That's how you find out what honey is. And you're never going to find out by licking on the jar of honey. Or doing all kinds of studies on the refractive index of honey. So, it's clover honey. It's not some other kind. But you still don't know what honey is. And it's like this other. The whole of Krishna consciousness is loving relationships. The essence of Krishna consciousness is relationships, and the nature of those relationships is loving relationships. But we don't know what loving relationships are because we're licking the jar of the honey. We're not entering into. So it has something to do with the theme that I'm picking up is getting to the essence and not just, you know, trying this way and trying it that way, but it's from the heart. It's the essence of Krishna consciousness is loving exchange with Krishna. And the medium is through that loving exchange with the devotees of Krishna. So I think that like everybody else, it's not just you as a group, but everybody in this world wants two things. We see, you know, happiness, but the essence of that happiness, the greatest of all happiness, is to love and to be loved. Everybody wants. Insects, birds, dogs, trees, any living entity, and how they express that is different. in this human form of life, we have the opportunity to actually enter into what a real loving exchange is. And it's on the spiritual platform. That's Krishna consciousness. And we're being given the opportunity by genuine loving devotees to enter into that loving exchange with Krishna through the medium of loving exchange with his devotees. And we'll never understand that by mental adjustment. Just looking at it in a particular way. It will never happen. It happens from the heart. And back to the other response that I gave. The primary medium that we all have is the holy name. And do you know what the price of the pure holy name is? It's one thing. It's faith. So all of what we're doing, in one sense, all of what devotional service is nurturing faith. Rupa Goswami teaches this, and from Shraddha to Prema, it's simply different stages of faith. Because the prema stage is the mature stage of faith, and the beginning stage is the seed of faith. And as that seed grows and matures, it becomes love of God, Krishna prema. And each successive stage of bhakti is nurturing of that faith. Each, you can just, you know, there's just different labels of the different stages of faith growing. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur also describes like that. So step back from your life for a moment and what we're even doing here for a moment, and what are we doing? And what is it that we want from what we're doing? We're taking up activities that are meant to nurture that attraction for Krishna. We have faith in the process that it will take us to Krishna. That's why we're all here. And we're feeling something, otherwise we wouldn't continue to come. Something is happening. Krishna is powerful. The process of devotion to Krishna is powerful. But it's not atma supersedati. It's not resonating fully. We have to go from receive and extend devotional practice, devotional service from the heart. Then we'll feel. We'll know what the taste of the honey is.